Hey, movie lovers, back for another Anatomy of Movie here on Popcorn Talk. Some would call us a movie club, and guess what? Today we're talking about book club.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Anatomy of a Movie.
Minds are blown, I know. And my members of this movie club are Marissa Serafini.
Hello, everyone.
Dimitri Panos.
Hey, movie fans. Cheers.
And I am Phil Svitek. And of course, you are all members of the movie club as well. You guys get to participate, chat with us live, write iTunes comments, or write comments on YouTube after the fact, or tweet us. Why not?
Why not? What's the famous Groucho Marx line about clubs? I wouldn't join a club that would have me as a member.
Well, I won't have you as a member either, so become a member.
There you go.
Anywho, couple of things. Welcome back to the show if you're rejoining us. Welcome to the show if you're joining us for the very first time. It is going to be spoiler-filled. This is our second of the day, therefore this is kind of our quick review, not as in-depth, but hey, we'll get into it as much as we can. Although you can always download our entire rundown, which has all of our notes. All you have to do is go into the description box, there's a PDF, click on that link, and it'll direct you there. But without further ado, let us say what we've thought about Book Club. Marissa.
All right. I love this film. I mean, it's so up my alley. It's my demographic. I mean, I'm not in the 60s demographic, but I feel like my soul is an older soul. I always joke that I'm basically a 70-year-old woman stuck in a 20-something-year-old body. So this movie definitely spoke to me. I love the dynamics between these four women, all different personalities. I am like one of the biggest champions of Diane Keaton, so I will follow her anywhere she goes. I read her books. I read. I watch her movies. I love her. She is literally my spirit animal. So I'm already biased, you can say, in that way. So if Diane Keaton's in it, I'm going to watch it. I'm going to be the first one in line. I saw this movie before I saw Deadpool 2. That's how much I wanted to see this film more. I loved it. And I heard it was funny. And from other people before I saw this movie, I went in and it had the laughs. It had a good balance with the male counterparts as well. And I enjoyed it. I had fun. There was reference jokes that I loved. I was familiar with the books that they're reading, so like all the things that they were touching upon in different relationships and friendship aspects, I totally related to, and I really love this film.
All right, Dimitri.
Well, I didn't.
Are you a 70-year-old man stuck in a 20-year-old body?
Many women would look at my being that way. Yes, at least from the head. It's the 12-year-old actually, almost 70. Look, first, you know, much respect for this cast, and it was actually the cast that I was most, which actually got me into this movie. And I'm not I like romantic comedies, a lot when they're good. I felt this movie, well, I called it immediately after Sexless in the City. It's four women, archetype women who are close friends. Each one's very different. Each one has different lives. And I appreciated that the women in this movie were successful, had jobs, and they were successful at what they did. Federal judge, that's a pretty big deal. And at least from the approach, I was enjoying. I liked, so we had the federal judge, Candace Bergen, who, a widower, trying to get back into the dating scene, which in these, you know, in these days, and it took place in LA, if I'm correct, too, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So that's not an easy thing to do in Los Angeles, no matter what age you are. And then you had Jane Fonda's character. She was the cuckoo one of the thing, and I completely got why she was never married or anything. And then you had Diane Keaton. We'll talk about her kids. That to me was the story that rang false. I called her story the schmanacy part of this movie, which is schmaltz and fantasy. But then you had, to me, the most accurate depiction. You had Mary Steenburgen and Craig T. Nelson, who, I thought they were paired really well. A lot of the people here were stalwarts in the acting community, right? They were very good together. And their story resonated from It had comedy, but there was drama to it, and it focused on the drama very well from an adult perspective and how it was handled from a couple who'd been married for a long time. When I watch a movie like this, it makes me think of Parenthood. Because Parenthood is a movie that has multiple characters, lots juggling, lots of plates flying in the air. And Parenthood is able to make you laugh, bring out emotion, cry, and connect the stories and make them work where you come to a great conclusion.
Also the show, too.
The show.
Yeah, I saw the show.
So this movie didn't have that for me. Things didn't really end. And this book club that was, well, the book club that it had, I mean, you can effectively say that 50 Shades of Grey, the series, broke up this friendship. Because they're either moving away, they're, and that to me was sad.
I don't think the book broke up this friendship, I think the situations.
You know, so what was most interesting to me is that the whole concept of the book club, like, I don't mind them being older women, and I like the notion of that just because you get old doesn't mean you can't have sex type of mentality. But what I felt would have been the strongest would have been their friendship and their ability to be on screen together. And they weren't on screen as much as I would have thought. Certainly, like, one of the movies that I love is Now and Then. And when you look at their friendship, like, it really is their friendship and less about the guys. There's guys that come in and out of their friendships. This is, they just kind of meet to strategize of how they're going to get these guys. And, you know, that to me is what's left as far as, I don't know, I just wanted something more with the actual book club itself. And that wasn't quite as evident. But I do agree with you, Dimitri, that relationship between them, the couple, when he comes in at the end with his jacket and he's there to do the dance with her and they do it. That was a really sweet moment. That I teared up.
It was. I mean, like, and Dimitri, you're saying, like, all these storylines. What I enjoyed is that this movie, I felt like, did a great job of balancing four different storylines with four different, quote-unquote, couples. And they all did essentially have their ending. They came full circle, in a sense, and they were all wrapped up compared to... I don't feel like there was, like, actual one storyline where... plot holes or something wasn't tied up nicely. I think for the four stories that were going on this film, they were all touched upon very well and all ended and had the resolves.
Yeah, I mean, I'll get into it like a little more, but that scene, and again, that scene could have been played a little bit differently too. Like, what if when she hits that scene at the end when they're doing the number, when she hits the thing and it's the meatloaf. It's the meatloaf song. I would do anything for love, but I won't do that. And she looks up, and what if you were in the wings? Because what if he was the one that set that up, right? Yeah. And they come out. But either way, it works. Because, again, to me, it was the most realistic portrayal of marriage, of an older couple going through a change, a life-changing event, which is retirement. She's a successful chef. He was successful doing whatever, and he retired. And then we talk about sex. And sex, I do like how they approached that even at that age, men and women think about it. But I liked how they were treated as adults. Even though we had the farce with the Viagra, okay, I get it. Funny. But they were treated with – that couple was treated with the most respect. I can get into the Diane Keaton, why I didn't buy into that. Like we said, Jane Fonda – look, the performances were fine. Candace Bergen can still deliver sarcasm. Nobody's business,
yeah,
right?
She's great.
And together, they were sort of fine. But to your point, Phil, yeah, I think the movie worked better when they were sort of apart. Together, they were okay. I wanted more of that. And their performances, again, these are, for the most part, legendary people, actors. I wanted it to take them more seriously as the women that they were. And to an extent, it almost did. But I like the couple story the best.
Well, let's start with let's go down the list, if we shall. Why don't we start with Diane, right? And in fact, Bill Holderman and Aaron Sims, they they wanted to pass the Keaton test, as they called it. Mm-hmm. So when they brought it to her, they wanted her for the role. And lo and behold, she does end up taking the role.
Wrote this film with Diane Keaton in mind. It was solely for Diane Keaton. They even named the character Diane because it was directly for Diane. And this isn't the first film that's written for Diane, because she's such a presence and such a character, personality just in life in general, that people want to write movies and do things for her because she's effing amazing. And I like that. And I liked how Diane, like, when she got into the meeting with Holderman and Aaron Sims, they're like, I can understand why you brought this film, you know, to me. That's what Diane said. Because it is catered to her personality. This is a Diane Keaton film. Trust me, I've seen them all. And so this definitely is up Diane's alley. And I'm glad that she was on board, because she is such an amazing star and actress that when she's the first person on board with this, she brought everybody else. And I applaud her for that. She does have that power.
What I didn't understand was, one of the things I truly appreciated about the other women was they had fantastic jobs. And so as much as they do talk about men, in a sense, I kind of attribute that to their overall success, that they found such an amazing balance of being able to be amazing at their jobs, a hotel owner, an amazing chef, and a federal judge. Then I can kind of forgive it in that way. But I was questioning, what is her sort of profession, and what is her, I don't know, legacy, if you will, in life? Because all we get as far as the backstory, from what I remember, is just the husband died a year ago and that she was a great mom.
Was she a designer or something, I thought? There was something about her that, I mean, because they were each in their own right successful, revered woman at what they do. And for some reason, I thought she, like, either did the publicity for something and she designed. I don't know.
It certainly seemed vague if we're having to draw straws. I don't know. Marissa, how do you feel about it? Because, you know, I just feel the other women were set up a little bit stronger, ironically, than her.
Right. And I think, I was trying to think of that as well. We clearly got the establishments of everybody else's careers. And hers, I just kind of believe that she became a full-time mother, a successful mother, because her husband had this successful career, and she was just the full-time mom. I'm like, my mother was like that. My dad had this successful career, and he supported us financially. My mom was just home the whole time. But that's not to say she didn't have a successful life either, and I think that was just the character of Diane in this film, that she was just the full-time mother, and that was her profession in this, and she was successful in that.
Yeah, and no qualms with that at all. And again, no qualms with their performance whatsoever. Qualms with her daughters, though.
Yeah, it's not to say it added or it didn't detract from her character either.
It didn't detract, true.
Yeah.
No.
So let me ask you, as far as Mitchell, the love interest, I know it's Andy Garcia, but I don't know if I loved him I don't know if the pairing worked for me. 100%. At first, what I did appreciate, I was going to be like, okay, he's a pilot and he's got this amazing mansion, but I like that he's this very fantasy type character. He invented this patent, and of course he's getting residuals from that, so it's not just him piloting. So I was like, okay, good.
But the patent that he...
It's something about jet streams.
Yeah, jet streams and air flows. It's something that changed the air flows. Love Andy Garcia, and he's great. I think this pairing was interesting because, again, I've seen every Diane Keaton film, and this character played opposite her he's so different from the normal man that we see. Andy Garcia's character was just so suave and so smooth with everything, like he was seamlessly not trying. And it's frustrating to have like such a perfect man on screen where you're like, how can you be so good doing like basically little to nothing. He was just so effortlessly cool. And I think that was different for her character. And she didn't know what to do with it. And I think that uncertainty between this relationship was what made the comedy exist. Like, she didn't know how to handle herself around him.
Yeah, I'm going to take this a step further, because this is why I called it the schmanacy part of the entire movie. Is that okay? So we're looking at a woman and a man. Let's Is it fair to say that they're in their 60s, low to mid 60s?
Yeah,
is that
everyone's fair? In their 60s.
And he was ultra cool and he was ultra suave. Okay. So here's the fantasy part of all this is that she meets a man who's really cool. Okay. He's a multimillionaire. So he lives in Sedona, beautiful house. He can fly literally anywhere in the world that they can go to together. That's all the fantasy part of it. Since this was trying to approach realistic relationship-wise, my biggest thing was he has no family. At that age, and for that not to have been a red flag for Diane Keaton to go, you've never been married? Wait, you don't have any kids? Like, what? How does that what's wrong? And that's like a legitimate, like, when you reach a certain age, there's baggage involved in one way, shape, or form. Every other character in this movie had baggage except for him. And that I wasn't buying. And again, that's usually a huge red flag. Like, that's a, like, if you're in your 60s and you've never been married, like, most women would look at that and go, why? Like, there's a problem. What are you avoiding in life? And as ultra cool as he was, he had one of the best lines in the movie when they were talking about kisses. And she goes, what if we talk about best kiss? And he says, well, what if that hasn't happened for you yet? And I was like, oh my God, that's a really cool line. I could never get away with saying that. I'd get slapped. But, you know, and I forgot he happens to look like Andy Garcia. Who everybody in this movie is aging gracefully, I have to say. Everybody looks good. So it didn't address the real part of this relationship that, dude, how are you not married?
Like, so you're saying that's an issue because he was successful, yet he didn't have a family? That's wrong. I find that actually very believable.
Yeah, no, actually.
I mean, he's a pilot. He's constantly traveling. And I just know from experience of guys who are constantly traveling, you don't have that time to properly build up a relationship, let alone a family.
I get what Dimitri's saying. It never came up.
It never even came up. Like, she never even asked the question, like, have you been married before? And if he hasn't been married at that age, regardless of the travel, there's a reason for that. And I'm playing, it's like maybe I'm just going
from
experience.
So you don't like that it wasn't addressed?
I don't like that it wasn't addressed. And if he was never married, that's a red flag. For women, most women, it's a red flag.
Not so much a red flag, just more a curiosity flag.
Well, as far as she was concerned, where I had the nitpick, and I get it was part of the story, but, you are... a 60-year-old woman, and your children have complete control over your life, and like if you're caught with a man that you love in that way, it's a subversion of the fact, like, oh, she's the kid now and they're the adults, and it's like, what are you doing? But it's like, no, get the hell out of here.
I found them to be annoying, and because I didn't find that character Diane to be free. I found her to be a good spirit. I found her to be good at heart, too. And I felt that her kids were looking at her as old, decrepit, which she was the exact opposite. She was on that other hump, but she still carries herself as there's more life to live, and I'm going to do this. And, you know, meeting a guy should be fun when you get to that point after mourning and such, but her kids put her down so horribly. I wanted her to put her foot down a lot sooner in the movie. And the opportunity came when they showed up at the house where she really could have yelled at them.
Well,
it was something.
I'm going to shift it in a moment just due to time. But I'll say for me, the missed opportunity was the reason why she was hesitant of that relationship was because of how they would feel about her, you know, sort of forgetting the father who died a year ago. And that was never addressed.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, but anyway, let's move on to Arthur. Good old Arthur from New York, who comes back 40 years later and wants her to make a wish. And then, as he says, every wish should be selfish. I joke, although that did happen. What did you guys think of this relationship, this development?
I liked it because just the establishment of Vivian shows that she's, like, so against being in a real love committed relationship. It's like short fling after short fling, that's her happiness. And to find someone come back into her life where she could actually settle down and be in an actual serious love relationship, that scares her. And I liked how that the one thing she was trying to avoid is the one thing that's in her face. And I like that. And to see Jane Fonda like play off of that really well. Her character is like so vivacious and colorful and so adamant against certain things in life, and then this is staring at her in the face and she's so wants to resist it. You know, it's not going to happen. You know she's going to fall for him. It's that old flame.
Yeah, it's that old flame, but everything lands on that character. There's a reason why she never married, and that's because she was kooky. And there's a reason why she turned and pushed men away, like Mitchell. And or not Mitchell,
Arthur.
And Arthur was interesting too, because he did make mention that he was previously married, and that she took his name in the house and whatever. I just didn't quite get he was in radio, and that's all I really knew about him. And I wanted to know a little bit more about, you know, how did they meet? You know, how was that relationship way back when? And again, when she pushes him away, he seemed like a nice enough guy. Actually, I like the wish scene. Sort of reminded me of that scene of the Goonies. You can't go in and get your wish back. But and he's right. Wishes are they are selfish. They're supposed to be for you. And I actually saw like. She was a little bit stolid. She didn't want to get wet. And she's like, what are you doing? He goes, I'm getting the wish. You got to redo it. That's one scene that I actually enjoyed as part of, that couple going off.
I like the fountain scene because it kind of, let the audience know that she used to be this fun, out, free-going, free-spirited kind of person who would go into a fountain. And, you saw a glimpse of her old past self when, that old person comes back in your life and you're suddenly that old person that you used to be. And, that came back. And it showed that she used to be fun and free-spirited in that way. I liked it.
Yeah, I like that analogy, actually. I think that's accurate. For me, one of the things that I felt with her character is she was so successful because she kept everything at a distance. And she needed control over all things. That's why the hotel, they made a couple of mentions of how many employees she had, which was like upwards of 150 and so forth. And everyone was very, at her disposal, if you will. And even the book club itself, she was kind of high and mightier than them. And she was... she's the one who introduced, if you talk about a catalyst or inciting incident, it's her giving the book to everyone and then that kind of spiraling the way it did. So she has this false sense of control, and then by the end she learns, her whole thing is risk assessment, and you know what? She got it wrong. Mm-hmm. Let's shift gears and talk about Sharon. Good old Judge Sharon.
Judge Sharon.
Which one of my favorite scenes was her being on Bumble or whatever it was and just being like, do you need a date? And it's, can I help you with anything else? Nope, I'm all good. Do you need a man? Or whatever, just kept
about
saying.
About sex life.
Yeah, just all these sexual jokes.
I think it's funny. I think her backstory also with, I believe
Steve.
It was, yeah, Steve and her ex quote-unquote husband, and with a younger person. So, I did like that, and just I'd have to admit, I've done online dating, and so, I related to her storyline. The whole uncertainty of, oh my god, I hope I don't meet a serial killer right now. I thought it was funny, because so many people, that's dating in 21st century, is you meet people online, because people don't have the proper time to meet people in real life. I thought it was good, and she was that single person compared to everyone else who's had an old person or met someone. She was that person who was actively seeking, and it was also a relatable storyline for not just the 60-plus-year-old, but millennials now are dating online.
That was one of my problems. If you go on to Bumble.com, there's nothing on there that says anything for senior citizens. Like, I'm like,
have you gotten Bumble? Do you know that?
Let's bring it up right now. Yeah, we'll bring it up right now. I mean, Bumble.com, when you look at that splash page.
I've never been on Bumble.
Bumble.com.
He's actually looking at
it. In-depth analysis.
I'm just
of
like
Bumble.
Going like, you know, it's like they paid a lot of money to get into this movie, but there's nothing that's. Unless they change, they don't even advertise the movie because I looked it up and it's a downloadable app. Look, does this look like, does that look like anything that there's a senior citizen on that page at all? No, not even close.
But it's not to say that senior citizens can't be on Bumble.
It's just
they're gearing towards the younger millennial demographic. I get that in the promotions, but it does not say once that senior citizens can't be on Bumble.
It's not saying it can't, but they're just not. Like, I was wondering how did the other dating sites miss out on this opportunity? In any case, and I get it, the online dating, and she was looking, she again, another widower for a long time. And I found that, well, A, I couldn't figure out if she was estranged from her son. I didn't get that dynamic at all because it didn't even seem like she knew her son. Like, had a girlfriend? Like, it came as a big shock to get the phone call that he's engaged. And I was wondering, okay, what's going on here? The older guy with the younger woman, we see that a lot. Hell, we saw it play out in Three Billboards. Not a comedy. But she did have my favorite quote, which I have to paraphrase because I don't... When she was at the engagement party... Mm-hmm. And she inadvertently becomes Toastmaster. She says something about love that I felt was like true. She goes, "Love, it's not necessarily all the things that, like, you know, the moon and the shining bright. Love is what you bring to the table. Love is part of you." And she said something that was very resonant. And they don't have quotes on IMDb for this movie yet, which I'm very surprised. She said something. Well, do you remember the quote that I'm talking about,
yeah.
Marissa?
Yeah, when she's talking about love, I don't know it word for word.
She said love, I mean, if you have it, jump in, but love is just the word, and... It's
not till you bring meaning to it. And I did like that. That's also a good message imparting wisdom from the older demographic to the younger demographic. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter where you meet... It's what you actually do once you're in the relationship.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I like the quote that she had and the way in which Candace Bergen delivered that monologue.
It was sweet and wasn't dripping with disdain or irony. It actually seemed genuine.
It did seem genuine. Although, again, I wanted more of, like, what's going on with... It's like she was a complete stranger from her son and... Well, it would now be the fiancé. So, and then as far as her dating goes along, listen, you know, Richard Dreyfuss as George was the sweetest. Oh, man, I actually felt bad for Wallace Shawn because, you know, Richard Dreyfuss can be considered a cameo. What do you call Wallace Shawn? I mean, he's in the movie. He's Derek the Dentist. That's all I remember. You can call me Derek, not the dentist. And he was invited to this engagement party, and he's not there, obviously. I would have liked exploration of Candace Bergen's character finding romance again with a very likable character, a seemingly likable character in George, as played by Richard Dreyfuss, who I haven't seen on the big screen in a long time. So to see that these two icons together, I thought was really well. Why didn't we play more with this? Because I would have liked to have seen her. She's a federal judge, but she can have a life. It would have been nice.
I mean, one of the things I appreciate as far as the lesson that she learned was this idea that she was holding on to Steve for 18 years. And it's like, you divorced him for a reason. You didn't like him. So, like, let it go. You know, move on. And I appreciate that about her. As we talked about Carol already a little bit. But so, just to kind of wrap this up, one of the... You know, not surprising, 88% of the audience for this movie comprised of women, not surprising, over 35 years old. Mm-hmm. Good for that, you know? Yeah. Listen, I think there should be a movie for every demographic.
But I want to. I think Carol and Bruce are important in this movie because of the way that this situation is handled. And I really love the fact that this couple actually sat down and talked about this, right, to work it out. And I also appreciate the fact that they had a man, right, Bruce, Craig T. Nelson, say, "I'm afraid. When I was at my retirement party, I got scared. I didn't know what I was going to do with my life." And there was a vulnerability, which usually sometimes that's flip-flopped around, where the woman is scared. And yet here, this is what marriage is. Marriage is not an easy thing. Relationships are not an easy thing. The reason why this couple perseveres is because they treat things very seriously. They have fun, you can tell. There is love there. But they discussed it, and they were open. They opened up their vulnerabilities. And you had a wife who's caring and loving and willing to listen. And I really appreciated this because that to me is the part that rang true. And to actually have a man show a vulnerability, which we don't see in movies that often, right? I thought that's what rang true, and I wanted more of this from each of the other stories combined. And in the end of the day, it didn't happen. So that's why they rang true as a couple, and they're going to live on. Obviously, they're going back home after the performance, which was very sweet, right?
To perform.
But is Diane Keaton moving out? Is she going to move to Arizona eventually, or what's going on? Jane Fonda, is she going to live in New York, or really is Don Johnson's character going to love her as he is, and he'll go from New York back to California, or whatever? It seemed that the book club did more harm in splitting them apart than rather than trying to keep everybody together, which the friendship, too, should have been. When Diane Keaton lays the bomb, like, "I'm moving to Arizona," like, I would have felt like there would have been more like, "No, you can't do that. Don't, you know."
Yeah.
Wait, I want this friendship to be, it should have been more of like the
front
focus.
Center, yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
Right. And I get that. I think the book club was more of just a backdrop location of setting everything off. And I'm actually okay with that because I felt like the whole, because of 50 Shades of Grey is a trilogy, I felt like that was the setup for the acts. It's like you had the first book, that was the first act. The second is where everyone was breaking up and leaving different ways. And then once they were on the third one, everyone was coming back together. Like, Don was finally getting at Arthur, was getting back. Diane was moving back to L.A. So, like, it had the general setup of first and second, third act, parallel with the books. So I don't think the book club broke them up, so to speak. It was just their life situations.
But to me,
I understand you might want the friendship aspect. I liked when all four of them were on screen and kind of wished they were all together, more screen time together. But there are other films like that too. Like, going to bring up a younger demographic movie or book, which is also about Sisterhood of Traveling Pants. Great book, great movie. There's only maybe like 3-4 scenes when those four girls are actually on screen together. The rest of the movie, they're all apart. So, but it works. It works for the chemistry. It works for the storylines.
That's a coming of age story. These women are of age, and the focal point's supposed to be this friendship.
I get that coming of age is different, but it's also just in production aspect. The storylines were so individually separate that it's okay that they don't always have to be together because they are so separate.
I get what you're saying, Marissa, but I side with Dimitri simply for the, like, you're right, the book club is supposed to be the backdrop, but it's a backdrop for their friendship and their, in essence, they've been doing this book club for 40 years, and now that, you know, it's not a coming of age story, but the times they are changing, and how do they deal with now this change? And they address it personally, but I don't think as a unit they really kind of bring that to light. I don't know. I think but hey, it's working for. It's got an A on Cinema Score, so kudos. You know, I think it's hitting the people that it wants to.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, you know, it's. What was I looking at here? 56 Rotten Tomatoes. Regarding its business wise, it's at 20 million, which is okay.
It's got a huge budget, though. It's got a $100 million budget, as I understand. That's a big budget for a movie like this.
Yeah, it should have been cheaper, but I guess maybe I would have figured that people would have. Yeah, I would have figured. Well, especially, I know where they did cut budget. Every time they were on that rooftop, it just looked so fake. Like that, it's looked real. Like it. Wow, like that took me out. But I would have figured that these women might have wanted to defer pay, like just to work together. From what I understand, they've all became good friends working on this movie together, and I can see that.
Yeah, and they all quoted that they really wanted to be part of this movie to work with X, Y, and Z.
Correct.
People wanted to work with Diane. People wanted to work with Jane Fonda. Wanted to work with Diane. All and some of the guys themselves have actually worked with some of these women on other productions and stuff in their past, but never once have they all been together in the same film. Yeah. And I like that because that just goes to show that the industry is small. People do know each other, but they always want to work with each
Absolutely.
Other.
Absolutely.
I made a Good mistake. Sense. Well, I made a mistake by reading Marissa's mistake because she's bad with numbers. It's $10
million. $10
million. You added an extra zero.
Yeah, that sounds like me.
So luckily, I fact-checked myself because I was like, yeah, that sounds a little high.
That sounds about right.
All right.
10 million.
Well, and on that
like,
wonderful
no way
note,
it could be 110.
It's time to wrap up this
That's
movie club.
Awesome.
On behalf of at Serafini TV,
yes.
For her terrible math skills, but love her nonetheless.
Yes. That's
Thank you, Marissa, for
so
making
true.
Me laugh.
I would
That's
totally,
awesome.
I'm totally buying this movie when it comes out.
For $100 million?
Maybe not $100. For $10 million, yes.
At DMovies 1701 for Dimitri.
Please.
I'm at Phil Svitek. Thank you guys as always. We'll be back for Solo, a Star Wars story next week, and we've got plenty of other movies in our rear view.
Oh, Solo Mio.
That's right. See you guys next time.
Producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network. We would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.